East 15th Street, about 300 feet from the Minneapolis Auditorium, as I sat in the old rocking chair alone, my mother being over to her sister's southeast for her birthday dinner, I having been invited there and forgot about it. And I heard the voice outside the dark, a newsboy hollering, "Extra! Extra! Extra! All about the Lindbergh baby! Kidnapped!" And I jumped up from the rocking chair and said, "What?" And I ran downstairs and got a copy of the paper and came up and sat down to read it. And halfway through with it, perhaps I can tell them where they can find that baby. But when I got through with the article, instead of standing up and talking about where they can find it, with the thought that there was a camera up in the attic taking pictures of my faces as I had hoped for a long time, I gave a 12-minute oration alone in that room on how to return the baby. What, after all, to return everybody something like a baby to his own mother in order to perfect our training for cooperating for the fine art of returning a baby to its mother. And I gave that 12-minute talk with the hope, I say, that a picture was being produced by the Department of Justice in certain areas for the purpose of locating the baby. As the month rolled on, I found it necessary and felt the call of the Holy Spirit to supplement and to sustain that speech with footsteps. And I'd get up at 3 o'clock in the morning at night and run out to South Shore of Lake of the Isles in order to coax somebody to return the baby so that I could take the baby back to New Jersey. And it was dozens of times at all hours of the night that I had to get up out of a warm bed to go out to follow a hunt that somebody was trying to get the baby to somebody who would take it back to the mother. And then I ran 100 and some hours with only 14 and a half hours of sleep up in the northern peninsula of Bayfield, 40 hours and a fraction without any sleep, and 31 hours on my feet in the cold in the last month of January way along in 1934, because I did not believe that the newspaper articles concerning the finding of the baby departed and dead. I did not believe that that newspaper article was a statement of fact, but was rather a fictitious report for the purpose of encouraging somebody not to desert the baby, to make sure that the baby would not be deserted and frozen and starved. And so I went on and on with that, in a total of 106, 7 or 8 hours running to coax somebody to follow me with an automobile in order that if they would bring the baby to me, that I'd carry the baby on my back or on the sled around the shores of Lake Superior, Lake Huron, Lake Michigan, Lake Ontario, Lake Erie, back to New Jersey to make sure that that baby would be returned to its mother. And years afterwards, in 1932, on the 25th anniversary, or the 20th anniversary, of that oration and of that disappearance of the baby, I delivered a speech in the YMCA, paid $200 advertising to get somebody there to notice what happens when an orator speaks to return a baby to its mother. The 20 years of experience and the struggle, 15 years of it in 8 months in one veteran's hospital alone, wherein I talked 500 million words in 50,000 hours extemporaneously while being tortured all time as if it was a third-degree torture plot conspiracy to try to find out what Ryan knew something about the baby. And then 175,000 miles of footsteps on locked floors in order to get out of that, to be able to get to the Lindbergh, to tell the Lindbergh what that speech was for and what the footsteps were for. And 25 years afterwards gave another speech in the same manner.
Thank you. But we cannot live in the past, we have to live in the next coming. And if we're going to survive, we are falling again. We have to work in government because we have nothing. We must make this land a beautiful place to live in, where we can live in peace and security. Not just a place to die in, not a country that's going to fall out or smoke on the street. We have to learn to be taught for new ideas. Like Rosalind said, remember just from this. Rosalind said this. We're going to throw fear aside. We have to, the only thing we have to fear is fear. California is involved on that. I have the occasion. That can death my brothers. But I want to say, a very happy occasion today when I came into the space. so many who are recognized, who have played an important role in the progress of the state of Minnesota. The people here today who I know on many occasions have differed with me politically, we have differed among ourselves. But the very fact that you are here today shows the staunchness of the Minnesota people. It shows the determination that they are going to continue on, regardless of all the intimidations that may have taken place. The spirit of the people to move forward, to make out of this state a better state, to make out of this nation a better nation, and to make out of this world a better world, is here, and it will grow. One of the things that I certainly appreciated was that we had standing before us today, who in my opinion and in my heart, were the greatest governor we ever had in the entire United States, the controversial contributions that this man made to the whole citizenry, especially to the workers and the farmers, many times has been underestimated among ourselves. At the time he was governor, I was involved in the labor movement. We were involved in strikes. We were involved in the timber workers' strike, in which he did things that no other governor ever did, and I want to say probably that he never even mentioned outside. He was not looking for glory. And I just want to quote this one instance. Where did you ever see a governor in the United States who took over the CCC camps and gave them to the workers, the striking workers, to live in and see that they were provided with food while they were on strike? Only one place that was here. We could go on a lot of things, but this here was worthwhile of a trip from California here, just to here, and speak again. Now, as I wanted to tell you a little bit, it was supposed to be a human interest story from one of the highlights of your life, probably in the struggles in the state. Well, I don't think I could pick out any one instance because they were all important. I see sitting back here a friend of mine who at one time we made a rush trip up to Onania when the vigilantes were carrying ropes, you remember, to lynch the leaders who were leading the farmers to get feed for their stock and food for their families. I can look around and I can see many who have participated in similar struggles. But now as to the spirit of the movement, I just want to relate a little incident that happened last year in L.A. They had a sort of a festival. I can't remember what the name was. But they had Paul Robeson came there to sing and to speak. Well, I talked with a number of the people who were involved in the organizing of this affair, who were pessimistic prior to the time of the affair. That is, they weren't pessimistic to the extent that they wouldn't put it on. But they didn't think it would be so great because of the persecution, the intimidation, the name calling. Everything is used by the enemies of the people to suppress them. To deny the free speech has been used there as other places throughout the country. And they look for probably, and they use a small park, they looked for probably 2,000 to 3,000 people. But instead of that, I believe I saw the happiest group of people, those who organized and worked to make this festival a success. More than 20,000 people swarmed the park. There was hardly room to move there. This, I bring out for one reason. And that was the word mentioned by Governor Benson. Sometimes when we give up hope to the people, oh no, the people are our only reliance. They will come forward, of course, they've been confused. But the spirit is not dead. And the people today, and among us who are here, as in other places throughout the country, have a great responsibility. And that is, if we are going to survive in this world, if we are going to shackle the war makers, if we are going to stop the experiment with the atomic bombs and the stockpiling of these terrific weapons of destruction, we must have faith in the people, because they are the only ones who can stop it. Don't ever give up that hope. In conclusion, I want to say again that we felt very good. We had a notice of this affair here, and little did I think at that time I would be here for it. The very fact that we went out there getting a notice that there was some activity going on here, that there was going to be an affair, is a great inspiration. People throughout the country to hear of these things. It inspires us. More than confused, they're very, very demoralized. In my life, which has been active to some extent, I believe I have quite a good understanding with my father, who was a veteran of the Civil War from the very day that it broke out, to the very end, and the very surrender. Now, he dwelt quite a bit on us boys, try to educate us to the extent that we would not fall for this propaganda of the great equality of the American boys, the great equality for everybody, whereby the son of a working man has the same opportunity as the son.
First contact with Susie when 1924, she came to our 7th Congressional District.
If people were rather smug, they seemed to think all was well in the country, just go ahead and get rich. But the soil did give out, prices dropped, and the assets disappeared. As a boy on the old homestead, I worked hard and had to learn to shortcut. We had to produce much wealth for others with scant help. We were 12 in the family, and I suppose that each of us collectively produced much more than all of us could consume in a lifetime. Father left a large estate after World War I, but the depression which followed reduced our heritage to one-third or less. Then on my own, as a rugged, ragged, and scatterbrained individual, I farmed, and with reading and lectures, unlearned some pre-adult indoctrination. I have written some controversial letters, most of which were published. And I married a lovely schoolteacher, and she worked hard. Perhaps one mistake was to impose our farm life on her. It was hard for her to give up teaching, and I have sometimes wondered how she could take it all and be a mother. One near fatal shortcut was having our special daughter, less than 14 years old, drive a tractor hitched to a binder, which I operated as I controlled the tractor clutch with a jerk line. We were reaping sweet clover for seed, and one place the machines were stalled by too heavy a swath. All at once I saw the front tractor wheels way up in the air. I jerked the clutch just in time to save our child. David Farmers competed for a part one more in Milkshake. Then the private jet or creamery came in. Now the farmers had their own S co-op creamery. Before that, I milked 8 cows, cooled and bottled the milk, delivered it to families in Morehead, washed the return bottles, and did all the chores. They worked 7-day weeks. We who have been through one major depression often know.
Western Minnesota. He had lost his farm, and he was a good worker for the cause. He was very active. But the organization helped him save his farm, and through the blood prosperity, he paid for the farm, and he was able to buy quite a bit more, and with each move, he became less progressive and more conservative. And he finally got to where he was out working for the opposition forces, and the last I heard of him was when he got a lot of land, about 800-900 acres of land that he had paid for, and he was really a capitalist. And the statement he made that time, he sold the land at a fabulous price, and he was voting Republican because he said that he was quite sure he could buy the land back again at a much lower figure after a while. And about that time he died, and the general assumption is that he went to hell, but it's doubtful, the change has been so gradual, it's doubtful that he knew the difference. I just want to draw a comparison between that kind of individual and Suthi, who stuck by the fight all the way through.
That's right. Susie, I'm sure we'll be all anxious to hear what you have to say when you get back, because I think that you will really try to talk to the common people over there and try to really find out what they think of us. Because I, from what's going on in the South America and all over, they haven't the friendliest feelings, and perhaps we can really find out what is wrong with us. Susie, a very happy trip, and I hope you will really get to do some of the things you want to do over there.
Thank you, Selma, and you're so right. That's exactly what I mean to do.
Edith? Well, I think if we compare Susie to this man who gathered gold, the contrast is that everything that Susie touches turns to gold. And I have a feeling that the people Susie touches turn to gold too. I get some of that feeling when I touch her, when she touches me. And we're going to miss you very much, and very happy to see you going, and we'll be very anxious for you to come back
this afternoon.
Oh, I see. And next, who is hiding behind there? Mrs. Brown?
Well, I have so much to say, but so I can't say it all. But I can't. I agree with Mrs. Seastrom, and also a sum total of all those things that were said to you, Susie.
Mr. Erickson?
Well, I think it's proper to have a gathering like you have here tonight to honor a person like Mrs. Storyworth. She was one of the early pioneers in the old time Labour Party that blazed the trail so the others could follow. And also wish her good luck on the journey.
Thank you. Mr.
Lockett? Well, I probably don't know Susie for as long a time as most of you do. But during the days when we had meetings, I would say that every time that Susie was the spice of every meeting and of every party. I hope that she'll enjoy and learn enough to come and to be the spice again, so we can hear her again and see her again.
Thank you. Are you girls on the busy there?
Oh. Yeah. Mrs. Stevenson, I wish you the best of health, the best of a trip for you, and hope that you come back feeling as happy and as good as you are doing now.
I'll join in wishing you a happy trip. I know you're going to enjoy yourself. Have home in the Balkan.
The sisters Wickstrom, you spoke this afternoon. Okay, would you like to say something, maybe? Arby's in the corner. Mrs. Avery, stand up so they can see you. This is Mrs. Charles Avery.
Mrs. Zuckerberg, it has been my happy privilege to have known you over a very long period of years. You and my late husband shared the platform many, many times. And I have enjoyed that friendship, even if I didn't make it known, but I enjoyed it. And now that you are about to make this well-earned trip to your native Norway, is that right?
I've never been there.
Oh,
but my parents did.
Well, I hope that you will have a very, very pleasant trip, and that you will return to us with new hopes and inspirations, and that you will be ready to share them with us, because I know each and every one of us will be very happy to hear from you. And I do hope that you will have just a very, very happy trip.
Did you take me on as your maid or something? I'd do everything I could for you.
Well, I know you'll have a grand time. I know you'll have a happy journey and come back.
The papers you read when you heard about Susie.
Isabel will be playing for us later this evening, so we'll hear from her again.
And I have to present my neighbor, Mrs. Persons.
Mrs. Persons, hi.
Have a good trip, and don't be surprised if the people in Norway don't regard the, well, all you people here as a bunch of failures.
I'll come to you later, Paul. Mrs. Lockett?
I will wish Susie Stavrogard a very happy trip. And she said that she hasn't been to Norway, so she should enjoy all her expectations. And
Charles talking up. Talking about them.
I'm not so sure about that.
Thoughts. One of those thoughts come to me. I was thinking about the fellow, I think his name is Pons Lili Ohn, that started out an early explorer to find the Fountain of Youth. And as far as we know, he didn't find it. But Susie Sagberg has found the Fountain of Youth, not physically, but spiritually. Because when I think of Susie, I think of her indomitable spirit, but it always grows younger every day. It's like the breeze of springtime that brings us growth in inspiration. And I've talked to Susie and told her that one thing I wanted to do, I wanted to greet the King of Norway for me. As a good old Viking, it's one Democrat to another. So I did not forget this day, but I was amiss today because one of my duties to be patriotic is to put the wreath at 5 o'clock in the morning on the 17th of May on the Statue of Ole Bull, and this morning I overslept. So I tell that to the King of Norway. But I wish you a very happy trip, and when you come back, Susie, I want you to tell us all about it so we can all meet again.
It was some of this gallant springtime talk that swept me off my feet too, Susie. And now I think we have a few extra letters here. Perhaps you would like to
especially hoping to that anywhere and everywhere all will go well with you, Bertha.
I'll put that back so that the contents won't be lost.
Is hoping your voyage is perfectly grand. From the moment you sail to your back on dry land. Esther Benson Nichols. So wonderful, Esther.
And this has no card, but the donor's name is on top. And this gift is
from Mrs. I regret very much that a wedding in my son's family in southern Minnesota on May 17th make it impossible for me to be at your party. But you can be sure that both my wife and myself are thinking of you and wish for you a very interesting and pleasant trip. When you return from Europe, we hope that plans will be made so that you can tell your friends about the trip. I am enclosing something that can be used on your trip. My
This is really... This is though. Can we give her a big hand in behalf of the... Al Donovan, Secretary of the State of Minnesota, to all to whom these presents shall come, greetings. This will introduce Mrs. Susie W. Stagelberg, a citizen of the United States of America and a respected and honored resident of Red Wing, Goodhue County, Minnesota. She has been employed in the Motor Vehicle Division of the Secretary of State's office for the past several years. She has also been very active in civic and educational projects in her community. Mrs. Stagelberg expects to travel extensively in Europe and the British Isles, and I am pleased to commend her to the public officials of the various cities and countries wherein she visits. This is to ask that, wherever she may be, she receive every attention and courtesy of which she is in every way deserving, to the end that she may always remember with pleasure and pride the treatment she received while absent from her home. Her signature hereto affixed will be evidence of identification, and that it has Susie's name written in her own handwriting. And to this reading, I hereunto subscribe my official signature and affix the great seal of the State of Minnesota at the Capitol in St. Paul this 18th day of April 1958. And I do think that in behalf of all of you, I would also like to express a special appreciation to our hostess, Mrs. Carlson, for it is through her effort and her enterprise that we have this delightful gathering here for our very charming and beloved guest of honor, Susie Stagelberg. And at this point, then, our hostess has a special message for you, Mrs. Stagelberg.
At first, I think I better explain why this thing happened. I spent 3 months in California this winter, and at the homes of both Judge Totten and Jim Robertson. And when they heard that Susie was going to Norway, they said, "Emma, you've got to go back and spark a party for her. We've got to have a testimonial dinner for her. She's worthy of it." I came back and found everybody head over heels in work. We have a big committee that's writing the Centennial Book of Minnesota. And we have others interested in the WIL and head over heels and work. And some of our good, dependable people were just not available to take on a big project like that. And now further, the hotels are full and busy and expensive. And if we were to pay $3 a plate for a dinner just to have a good meal for ourselves, that wasn't doing Susie any good. Right. So we figured Susie better have the money instead. Very important. So we've got a nice zipper compartment right in the middle. That's big enough for the passport. And Susie, it's almost big enough for all the money you've got tonight. This is what you got this afternoon. And then we also have the cash that was in the kitty, which did amount to $50 besides the check.
This is the what you put in the copper bowl up here.
That's right. That was all in the copper bowl. I swiped it. And then now I think there's on this other side there's room for the rest of that stuff there. So Susie, with the greatest of pleasure, I put this into your keeping and just have fun with it.
Yep, fun. Perhaps at this moment, Susie, you might like to say a word to us, and we want to hear you sing later. There are a few other numbers, but we'll let Susie speak at this moment because we want to hear from her.
I don't know what a person can say in such conditions. You know, when I came into the progressive movement of which we've been speaking, as I said this afternoon, I didn't expect anything except what I got. As for my immediate family, my husband was a respected professor in a theological seminary. He taught New Testament Greek and many other subjects. And when his associates found out that his wife had joined the nonpartisan, that was bad enough. But when she also became a candidate in the newly born Farmer Labor Party, that was the end of respectability for both of us. And my husband was a good churchman, and I wanted a good churchwoman. But many a time we went to church and went home and wondered if we had a friend there. And so down through the years, it didn't improve for a very long time. They had certain names for us. First we were socialists. No, first we were Bolsheviks and socialists. But in 1928, they had a new name for us. We were free lovers. Charles Lindbergh resented it, and he waved his arms. They call us free lovers. I'm here to say that there are more free lovers in the Curtis Hotel than in all the farms of Minnesota. They haven't got time. I didn't deny the fact that I was a free lover, because I went into this thing because I loved people. I loved men, women, and children, and babies. And I wanted the right kind of living conditions for them. Time went on. And of course I was a candidate. You know, so many people thought, of course they thought it was a terrible thing, the wife of a teacher in the church school. And I know that I did leave my three-year-old baby, but I took the first trains that I could get, night or day, to get back to him. And I know that every time I left him, I could say in my heart, baby, I'm doing this for you. And so, as I went through the campaigns in 1922 and 24 and 28, and for Congress in 32, I wasn't worried about anything except the one thing, that I should be able to bring the message of our program. And when the election day came, I cast my ballot and I went to bed at night. I never stayed up to hear the returns. I didn't expect to be elected. I don't know if I cared too much. I just felt I'd done what I could, and that was enough. I want to say that I'm not sorry for one minute of trial or tribulation that we went through in those days. They were wonderful, inspiring days. They were days in which we had a goal that we saw so clearly, and that we were working toward with might and main, with a big heart and a good conscience. But this is something else again. You know, after you have gotten used to brickbats, you almost learn to like them. you begin to feel that that's what you've got coming, and you almost begin to feel at home with them. But this is something else again. It's quite unnerving. If it were not for the fact, my boys, you know, they used to say, they've said many times, oh, Mom, she hasn't got any nerves. I would be quite unnerved, because this was so unexpected. You know, my darling Emma, we've been pals these many years. Always true blue, Emma. I'm always welcome here. I always know that I can love and be loved. But this time she didn't play quite square with me. She just invited me to come up and celebrate the 17th of May. And the only stipulation was that I should sing Jobbjelska Detta Land. And we haven't done too much singing together. I was just kind of wondering what the idea was. Still, I knew it was quite an appropriate day for me to do it. So I promised, of course. But here you are, all of you. You're all so wonderful. You've said so many beautiful things. You know, this afternoon I told a story about a little colored boy that was being called names by a white boy, and the colored boy wasn't too adept at answering, so I suppose he was bawling a little, and he says, "All them things you call me, you is." And that's what I want to say to all of you. All the things that you've said about me, I could say to you. All the things that I have done, you have done too. And you continue to do it, or you wouldn't be here tonight. And when I look at you all and think about what good soldiers you've been, and you're not mercenaries. You're not hired for so much a month. You're in it for life, and at no price that man could pay you. That's the type of which patriots are made. And whether we make the front pages of the Daily Star, or whether we get no honors whatsoever, there is within right here, in all of your hearts, that feeling of gratitude for what you've been able to do and to contribute to a better day. And that is quite enough. But of course, now, when you all come, and you're so sweet and so lovely and wish me so many good things, well, it just warms you. And then all that money, I'm just almost paralyzed when I think about that money. You know, I've known what it is not to have very much money. And I have learned how to put elastic in my dollars till they squeak. Yes, I have learned to do that. And I haven't been sorry for myself. Really, it's quite an art. It's quite a wonderful art if you can do that honestly. But now, all this money, I'm going to have to do something wonderful with it. I'm going to have to bring you back something that will remain with you. Of some kind, I have to bring that. But as I leave, and I bring with me all this love and all this sweetness, oh, I will feel so blessed. There's only one thing I can say. I thank you, and I thank God. And I just pray the blessings that will come to you, just as I quoted this afternoon Madeline S. Bridges when she said, "For life is a mirror of king and slave. 'Tis just what you are and do. Then give to the world the best you have, and the best will come back to you." That's what you have given, the best you have. You've been willing to face anything. Even imprisonment, some of you have been willing to face for the principles that you have in your heart, for the highest good of humanity. Greater love hath no man than he who gives his life for his brother. That's the verdict of the one who knows. And so, what can I say more? You've been so wonderful. It's been such a wonderful privilege to earn your friendship and your esteem and your approval. That's been, shall I say, the greatest blessing of my life. And now I guess the best thing I can do is to say, sing Jobbjelska. Norwegian in good Norsk. And then she said, sing the translation after that. Well, I think maybe we'll just do two verses of the translation.
Yeah.
Jag vi älskar detta landet som bestiger främst för ett verbit adervånet med tusen jän. Älskar, älskar det jag tänker på vår far och mor av den saga
thank you.
So, Susie, you take that with you and pin it on you and you go out.
Oh,
that's my little personal. But I hope you are assured of our love and affection. And once again, we hope you have a grand trip and come back to us.
Oh, thank you just a million times.
So let us give one more round of applause to
the towns, the villages on the Iron Range. To their spy system, to their agents, to their representatives in the city councils, in the governing bodies, as well as having an effective system of lobbying and in the state legislature to prevent the people of the state from gaining a greater income to taxation of the iron ore that was taken out from these iron ranges. Once the CIO came in and was established, this spy system became obsolete. It could not play the role anymore that it played in the past. The miners no longer had the same fear. In actual fact, they didn't have the fear that they had in the past years. They knew that they were a great power now, that they had the power to face the mining company on an equal basis to demand what rightfully belonged to them. This, above all else, was a tremendous victory for the miners. It gave them greater freedom than ever before. They felt that now they could walk the streets without the fear of a stool pigeon following them, without the fear of a stool pigeon listening in to what they were saying against the steel corporation. And one can say, in fact, that the people of the range have no love for the U.S. Steel Corporation or any of the mining companies. They are out to get as much as they can for themselves and for their communities. And this is what they've strived to do. It's true that they have only one partial demand. It's true that they have only one a portion of what rightfully belongs to them. But through their efforts and struggles, they have been able to put in their own men into the city councils, into the village governing bodies, and they've been able to fight to the extent that they have today on the range some of the most wonderful schools in which their children are gaining a better education.
My dear friends, I don't know of anything in the world that would make me happier than to be with you in person at this very moment. As it is, the scientific marvels of this present age permit me to speak to you even though I'm far across the sea. More than anything at this time, does this fact bring home to me the amazing shrinkage of our great big world and how close we can be even when far apart. This situation must necessarily mean that we have become close neighbors to all nations and that we must make some personal and national adjustment that will permit us to be genuinely good neighbors if peace and harmony shall be maintained. I need say very little to you, my good friends, concerning the fact that because of concepts entirely foreign to those in your own minds and hearts, the spirit of the good neighbor is not the prevailing spirit of today. Instead, we have selfishness and greed, dictating a policy of me first that can breed only suspicion, distrust, and even outright hatred. The South American Nixon incident could be a case in point. To a discerning observer, This situation calls for a complete reversal of national trends, with the same sudden conviction of the northern general who shouted to his men, "Turn, boys, turn, we're going back." For to go on in the same blind trail of an endless arms race and perpetual fault finding can only lead to a needless cataclysm of wholesale death and destruction. At such a time, it seems to me that the call comes loud and clear to our Minnesota progressives to take up our spiritual armor where we laid it down when intolerant hysteria closed avenues of expression and performance, in order to provide for themselves a free field for their own plans for personal power and profit. This meeting today, as we present the story of heroic deeds in other days in the history of our beloved North Star State, must be a rallying point in a new social and political renaissance, bringing to the fore the elemental needs of humanity: peace, progress, and universal brotherhood. To this end, may we enjoy the absolute dedication of the women in foreign lands who, with united voice, cry out, "Women and mothers of the world cannot forget the dead and the ruins of the Second World War, and they will no longer accept this monstrous state of affairs. We must demand the immediate cessation of atomic and thermonuclear experiments anywhere in the world. We are sure that an agreement on this point is both urgent and possible. Events have proved that friendship and understanding among people can replace force and violence, and that a determined people can vanquish war. Today, more than ever, the fight for disarmament is the fight for peace." To take such a firm stand in our day may demand the same price that has been paid by men and women of vision and purpose in every age. But the reward of an inner consciousness of duty well done in behalf of all humanity is above the possession of crown jewels. Here and now, resolve yourselves into a committee of the whole and form a nucleus of the Minnesota movement that with courage and boldness will espouse the cause of all humanity in its universal quest for the human brotherhood that builds the whole world into a common understanding of the united need for peace and fraternity. And as we scan the far horizons of the world's need, may we say with the poet, "Mourn not the dead, but rather mourn the apathetic throng, the cowed and meek, who see the world's great anguish and its wrong and dare not speak."
Members of the legislature have been elected by the people on the ring.
Thank you.
Progressive lot of people. They are people who are fighters for their rights. Well, it seems to me that a story like this should be headed by a former organizer of the United Steelworkers Union.